This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network, which you can get over at DraftKingsNetwork.com or on Samsung TV Plus for our listening audience. A lot of fun that we have on deck here for the next couple of hours here, Michael. How are we doing on this Saturday morning?
I mean, what could be better? I mean, seriously, what could be better than
nothing.
Saturday in September? Enjoying college football. We got the pro season getting ready to start. We got Twitter Femi going to come out today. We got four screen Femi coming out tomorrow. I mean, I don't know if it gets better than this. I really don't. I mean, I'm just going to cherish the moment. I really am.
This is what we lift all those weights for, man.
That's what we lift all them weights for. Exactly. That's right.
This is what we do it for. It's going to be a whole lot of fun throughout the weekend. Cannot wait for it. Obviously, like, we love the NFL. We love college football as well. But I cannot wait for tomorrow. That's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. I might not be able to sleep tonight, to be quite honest, Michael. But we do have fun on deck for you guys for this show. 15 minutes from now, Tim Murray, host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast and VSiN Primetime, will join us with his plays. Tim likes a lot of dogs. We'll see if they're barking later on this afternoon. We'll get Tim's thoughts on today's slate coming up 15 minutes. And then in the second hour at 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, Matt Youmans, host of VSiN Tonight and also co-host of the College Football Betting Podcast, will join us to give us his not only college football thoughts, but NFL thoughts as well. We'll get both of those from Matt Youmans. He's doing the Friday Football Invitational, which is Friday nights there here at Circa. So that's a whole lot of fun. I'm sure he's gathered a lot of sharp information from everybody that's involved in that contest. So we'll get Youmans' thoughts in hour number two. But Michael, we'll talk NFL later. We have to start with college football, and we have to start with a game in Boulder. A rivalry renewed, Nebraska at Colorado. This has become like a betting bonanza. I'm sure you've seen the reports out there on Twitter and elsewhere where this game is getting more money, more tickets than any other game on the college football slate, more than any game on tomorrow's NFL slate. Everyone will be watching Nebraska-Colorado later on this morning or afternoon on the East Coast.
Yeah, I mean, look, there is magic in Boulder, let's be honest. I mean, you know, what he's been able to do, and with his son playing quarterback, and, you know, and the talent that he brought in there where everybody didn't think he brought talent in, he did. You know, he kind of knows what he's doing. I think behind it all, and, you know, we wrote about this in the Daily Coach this week, behind all the Dion, the conversation, you know, the flashy glasses, the cowboy hat, the earrings, the bravado, there's an old school coach in there. He holds players accountable. You know, he holds the coaches accountable. He demands excellence. And, you know, people keep asking me, is he going to be a pro coach? Well, the problem is he has more authority at Colorado than he's going to do at any time he comes to the NFL. Mm-hmm. He's going to face committees in the NFL. That's not something that really makes that very effective. So I'm excited to watch this game. I think Matt Rhule probably loves the fact that Colorado's getting all the attention. He also loves the fact that Jeff Sims can't turn the ball over. He's got to stop red zone turnovers, and if he can do that, I think it'll be a lot closer game.
Yeah, I mean, if Jeff Sims doesn't turn the ball over in that fourth quarter last week against Minnesota, Nebraska should have won that game over there in Minneapolis. Right. Deion Sanders did address the media. You talked about the sunglasses. He was wearing the sunglasses at his media availability earlier this week. Here's what he had to say about the magnitude of this game, Nebraska and Colorado.
I've learned the severity, the serious nature of this rivalry, and I'm embracing it 100%. This is personal. That's the message of the week. This is personal.
We just know the history of it, Colorado, we don't like Nebraska. Simple. So that's just what it is. We just got to focus on that. Okay, cool, we don't like Nebraska, but that's not really going to change, like, the preparation or anything like that, because we prepare like nobody likes this because we know we're going to get everybody's best game. So it's just another thing on top of, like, a little bit more motivation, just a little bit, but we got to already be motivated off rip.
Well, that is Deion Sanders and, of course, his son, QB1, Shedeur Sanders. And he's talking about, like, they're going to get everyone's best shot going forward because they are now the national darling. They're the story of college football early on in this season. And from a betting standpoint, this market has fascinated me more than any college football market that I can remember in quite some time. It opened here at Circa at 5. like the crew here at Circa opened 5, immediately got bet all the way down to like 2.5 and 2, went all the way back to 3.5. Now it sits at 2.5 as the consensus line, total 57.5. The market is expecting a really close game with two teams that we're still gathering a lot of information on.
Yeah. Well, I think, look, the one thing I want to make a point of, what we heard Sanders say, both his son and him, you can hear the messaging from Deion to the players, and the players are repeating his messaging. I mean, I think that's significant, right? I think that's kind of what you know the players are listening to you on. And I know this from having talked to people in the building, that they are very, very much about getting better. And Deion basically stopped all the pats on the back on Sunday morning to the coaches and to the staff and let them know there's more meat on this bone and that we've got to get more out of our team. And I think they won't take this game lightly. I think they will do everything in their power to then create a situation where, you know, they're going to try to play their best football. We'll find out where they are. Look, we know Nebraska's a good team. They may not be a great team. We don't know what TCU is. I mean, we're collecting data as we go along here. Mm-hmm. We can't make final judgments, even though everybody rushes to a judgment.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good lesson to be learned here for a lot of folks out there in the betting, which regardless, whatever side you're on, whether you're laying the 2.5 or taking the 2.5 or taking 3 with Nebraska, like I think it's like we're still in the data collecting mindset here early on in the season, especially with the transfer portal being chief among things here. Like the roster overhaul at Colorado was unprecedented, and it's hard to kind of get a grasp, in my opinion, on what this team actually is. Like we have one data point from a team that everybody said last week this time, lay 20.5, lay 21 against TCU, and they go ahead and win that game outright. Like, to me, I think that there's such an unknown with both of these teams, but especially with Colorado, just based on the roster overhaul, and also people just haven't been able to quite quantify what Deion Sanders has brought to that program. I think the point that you brought up there, the fact that he is more dialed in and more old school than people actually think, might give this Colorado team an advantage and maybe provide a little bit of value here to this Colorado team because everybody thinks that it's glitz and glamour and must be the money and prime time and all that stuff.
Right, and everybody loves, you know, offensive football. But what you peel back the numbers, right, you peel back the numbers, their performance last week defensively in scoring defense ranks 117th in the league in college football. Mm-hmm. Their total defense ranks 126th. Their run defense ranks 128th. Their passing defense ranks 106th. Their yards per play ranks 113th. So before we start giving them the national championship trophy, they're going to have to fix those numbers, right? Yeah. And the last time I checked, TCU wasn't the greatest offense in college football. Again, I love the Deion story. We wrote glowingly about him on the Daily Coach this week because there's more to him than the glasses, the earrings, and the false bravado. There's more to that, right? He's an old school coach. Mm-hmm. But we have to temper down expectations and repeat these numbers because that's what's on the tape. That's exactly what's on the tape, and I think you've got to do that. I mean, look, they're going to play against an offense that ranks 121st in the nation, but their defense was pretty good last week. Their defense stopped the run. They're their 10th best. They were the 19th best run defense in the country last week. So we're going to see a little bit of two opposite teams, and we'll see what strength on strength matches up to.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the matchup of Colorado's offense versus Nebraska's defense there. And maybe it's weakness on weakness when Nebraska's offense is going against Colorado's defense. That's going to make for the fun game because we know styles make fights with these college football games. I want to get your pick on this game a little bit later on in the show, or at least what you think is going to happen here. But the trenches, I think, is where I'm going to be looking at to see if Colorado can hold up, because that was the big question mark heading into the season was they're really bad in the trenches. They got good skill guys, but really bad in the trenches. They passed one test, but this week is another test. Like Nebraska is a little bit better up front defensively than what we saw from TCU last week. Another marquee game here, Michael, is Texas and Alabama. And usually this would be the game everyone's talking about, but everyone's kind of talking about what's going on in Boulder. But this is going to be a fun one. We have the Longhorns against the Crimson Tide right now. Alabama 7-point favorites, total 53.5. What did you make of Jalen Milroe last week? And do you think that he can continue this going forward against a more talented Texas team?
Well, I thought, you know, Milroe played well. I mean, you know, it was more of a run game than it was a pass game for him. But we know watching this kid, whether it was last year against Arkansas when he had to step in and play, he's pretty good. But I think what really was different about Alabama on last Saturday was there is a sense of purpose on defense. It's a different defense. You know, and I think with Kevin Steele running the defense through Nick Saban, I think Nick was embarrassed. And I've said this in the offseason, and I'll continue to say it. I think Nick was embarrassed by what they did defensively last year. This is a defensive secondary coach at heart. You know, we all come from a background. We all come from something that we have great pride in. And Nick takes great pride in defensive football. He loves it. You know, and last year it was embarrassing to lose the way they did at Tennessee, to make that Texas game a lot closer than it was with the backup quarterback in. Mm-hmm. I think Alabama defensively, I know they don't have the great Will Anderson, and I know everybody takes a focus on that. I think they'll play better defensively today. I think this will be a great test for them. And, I mean, you could see yesterday from just the campus at Alabama, right? I mean, they had game day down there. I mean, that is going to be one loud, loud place to play.
Yeah, and this is going to be a fun data point for Quinn Ewers, who we saw only for two drives in this game last year before he got hurt in that game. And those two drives, he looked really good, but it was just two drives. Let's see what Quinn Ewers and all the hype is about going down there to Bryant-Denny Stadium, Tuscaloosa. We know it's going to be 100,000 strong. Like, I'm really fascinated to see this Texas offense against this Bama defense that's looked pretty good, at least in 1 week.
Yeah, they're going to be different. Look, forget the middle. They play Middle Tennessee. Bama's defense, you can write this down, is going to be vastly improved this year because it's going to be a point of emphasis, and it bothers the head coach more than you could ever imagine.
All right. Well, I'm writing it down right now here on my
– Good. Write it down.
We'll be vastly improved.
Maybe they'll come out in a Twitter Femi tweet some point. We can get that out.
Hey, later this evening. Who knows what happens? Maybe we'll get a couple soda pops in us, man. We might get crazy. All right. On the other side, Tim Murray, host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, joins us to break down the card here on this Saturday morning. This is the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits are another way. VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line rolling along here on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. And to kick things off for us here guest-wise on this College Football Saturday, nobody better than our buddy Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime, which you can check out 6 to 9 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, and also the host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcast. Tim, thanks for joining us and waking up with us this morning. Bless you, Michael. But before Thank we you. Get into the rest of the College Football slate, we'll fulfill our contractual obligations, and we will talk Nebraska-Colorado, a game that you have a bet in right now. What do you like in this one over in Boulder with the rivalry being renewed between the Cornhuskers and the Buffaloes?
Yeah, we talked last week not knowing what to expect, and ultimately I said, you know, no play on me for me, but I guess I would look a little bit towards the over, and boy, I wish I had made that play because it was an easy over with that flash-fast offense that Sean Lewis brought to town and the talent that they have offensively. Ultimately, guys, what I did was I did take some 3.5 and took a little 3 as well. You know, this is a situation where we'll see. You know, did the market overreact a little bit too much? You know, the odds makers that you know, you speak to here in Las Vegas throughout the week and even across the country. You know, we had Michael's good friend Carl Johnson on VSiN Primetime and talked about just the overwhelming ticket count that was on the side of Colorado here. And you're getting pretty much all those reports from everybody. So this isn't just a blind fade of the public. This is my thinking that there's just maybe a little bit too much of an overreaction to what was a really impressive performance from Colorado. I do think Nebraska up front could potentially push around the Buffaloes, as we saw in that game against TCU. TCU got really a lot of push offensively and didn't have much trouble moving the ball down the field. Now, now you have to worry about Travis Hunter, who apparently is Superman because he does it all and catches touchdown passes and intercepts balls on the goal line. So look, there's no denying that what Coach Prime has done so far at Boulder is remarkable. And we probably have never seen this before, but I do think this could be a situation where we've gone just a little bit too far. Look ahead lines this summer, guys, where Nebraska as a 9-point favorite. So I'll take the 3 with Nebraska and hope we have a close game here this afternoon.
You know, it's amazing. The line hasn't moved. I mean, the 11,000, I mean, there's over 100,000 bets on the game and very little money on ticket count and on the cash count. And yet the line's almost frozen. There's some 2.5s out there, but the 3, somewhat remarkable. You'd think they would, but I agree with you. I think the adjustment's already been made. I want to shift to the Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher, my favorite coach in college football. You know I love him, Femi. You know I love him. Mm-hmm. I mean, that offensive mind dazzles me every week. So I have to kind of get excited. Line open 4.5, favorite Texas A&M. Now it's been settled pretty much at 3 against Miami. And where are you on this one? You're dazzled by Jimbo. I know you are. I know you're dazzled by him. I mean, everybody, you read any writer, he'll tell you what a great offensive mind Jimbo is. Just all you got to do is ask him.
Well, I'm not as I echo those sentiments, Michael. And I also have similar thoughts about Mario Cristobal, his opponent this afternoon.
Well, this is a checkers matchup you just can't wait to watch, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
That all being said, I'll take the points with the coach I don't like versus the laying the points with the coach I don't like, because I'm with you on that. But, you know, look, this is a situation. Both of these teams recruit well, and then it seems like they can't put it together when they get out on the field. Miami, very busy in the portal, top 10 according to 247 Sports. And I think they've got some legitimate guys on the field, as does Texas A&M. There's no denying that. You know, it's hard to take too much from their initial, you know, victories as Texas A&M played New Mexico, who is probably the worst team in the Mountain West Conference. And Miami took down the other Miami, not the real Miami. Sorry, Brett Gabbert. But... You know, that was an impressive performance. You can't take too much from it. Miami, I would say, is, you know, a little bit more formidable than New Mexico, but you might be splitting hairs there. Miami thought to be one of the better teams in the MAC, but I think taking the points is the way to go here. You know, earlier this week on the podcast, you know, 4.5 was readily available, so I scooped that up. I just think, you know, you got a little bit of revenge factor, and think back to last year, guys. It was a disastrous performance from Miami, losing 17-9. They actually outgained Texas A&M in that game in College Station. So, you know, you never know what the atmosphere is going to be like down there, you know, in Miami. But I do think the Canes keep this thing close today and certainly have a chance to win it outright. So that's why I took the points with two tremendous coaches.
We're speaking with Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime, yeah, and also our VSiN College Ball Betting Podcast. Tim, I know you don't have a play in this game, or at least not one of your best bets, but I do want to ask you about this one. It kicks off at noon Eastern, 9 o'clock Pacific, Utah and Baylor. And Pete Famel, ESPN reporter, is reporting that Cameron Rising, the Utah quarterback, is not expected to play in this game. There's still some 7.5s out there in the market. Is that a bet for you, Baylor getting more than a touchdown against, I believe it was going to be the third-string quarterback here for the Utah Utes once again?
Yeah, this would truly be a hold your nose situation. You saw Utah play without their starting quarterback, you know, a little over a week ago against Florida, and they come out and they throw a touchdown pass of 70 yards on the first play from scrimmage, and then after that, it was kind of sputtering. Now they go with a dual quarterback type of system there, with Cam Rising being sidelined. You know, you have to remember this too, though. Baylor is without their starting quarterback, Blake Shapen. Was injured against Texas State, a game in which Baylor lost by 2 touchdowns to Texas State. You know, G.J. Kinney came in from Incarnate Word, and boy, what a performance that he had in his debut as the head coach of Texas State, their first ever win over a Power 5 opponent. But I think for me, Femi, this is just me personally. I'm going to stay away from this spot. You know, I understand, you know, if people are looking to grab the points with Baylor at home, maybe an ultimate buy low spot. I'm not going to disagree with that. I just think if Blake Shapen was playing, I would be looking to back the Bears here. And this was a spot, you know, over the summer I kind of had circled, guys. But with the uncertainty at quarterback there for Baylor, the really lackluster performance in week one, I'm gonna sit this one out here.
How about, you know, look, I love Texas Tech. To me, I think their program is on the rise. There's no question about that. And they stubbed their toe up in Wyoming, losing the game in overtime, all the delays in terms of with the weather. But now Oregon comes in after Oregon just mercifully just destroyed poor Portland. You know, I mean, it wasn't fair. So I think it's a different game going to West Texas. I don't think people realize how hard it is to play in Lubbock. And I think people just assume it's going to be a walk in the park, but you don't. You seem to like Texas Tech. I agree with you here, Tim.
Yeah, this was the first game that I looked at this weekend, and honestly, I've been looking at this game all summer. It has played out kind of perfectly in the way that I had hoped. I didn't think that Texas Tech would lose outright to Wyoming, but here we are. They did. And, you know, that game, as you mentioned, Michael, kind of a bizarre situation. You had a lightning delay. Texas Tech comes out. They score 17 points in the first quarter, and then they kind of went to sleep and forced their way to overtime. And ultimately, when you get to overtime, as we know, you start two-point conversions in the second overtime after you score your touchdowns, and that's what happened. Texas Tech didn't convert their two-point conversion. Wyoming did. They win 35-33. But, you know, let's not forget about how we assess Texas Tech all offseason. I mean, people believed, and I was one of them. I didn't think they would win the Big 12, but I thought they would certainly contend, guys. And now we're just going to throw that away? So I love this spot for Texas Tech. You're getting, in my opinion, a little extra cushion there because of how week one unfolded. And, you know, down in Lubbock at nighttime, we know things get a little funky. I mean, look, this is the game that I always think of when I think of a night game in Lubbock. But, you know, I think back to Halloween 2008, our guy Brent Musburger on the call, and Graham Harrell connects with Michael Crabtree down the sideline with 1 second to go as Texas Tech beat number one Texas. So I think it's a very competitive game tonight. I'm not going to get lost in Oregon's 81-point performance, most points scored in an FBS game since 2014. So, yeah, give me the Red Raiders tonight. I think this is a competitive game in prime time down in Lubbock. And I think the Red Raiders look more like the team we expected to see this season tonight than we saw last weekend.
Also, a Tyler Shuck revenge game on deck here for this one. Red Raiders, who was a quarterback at Oregon, transferred, now the starting quarterback for Texas Tech. He is Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime. Check it out Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern with our buddy Sean King. Also, host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcast. Tim, thanks for the time, man. Good luck with the bets.
All right,
thanks,
fellas.
Tim.
See ya.
All right, we'll recap some NFL headlines on the other side. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Our very own Michael Lombardi has just written his second book called Football Done Right, setting the record straight on the coaches, players, and history of the NFL. Now, for a limited time, you can get a free copy of Michael's new book when you become a VSiN Pro annual subscriber. Just sign up on a new VSiN Pro annual subscription today and use promo code Lombardi. Get an entire year of VSiN Pro access to our daily best bets, season prep betting guides, 24/7 video, and pro tools like our exclusive betting splits. Remember to use promo code Lombardi when you sign up for a VSiN Pro annual subscription to get your free copy of the book. This is a limited time offer, so sign up at VSiN.com/subscribe. Today. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. Thank you to Tim Murray, who joined us in the last segment. Tim, of course, is the host of VSiN Primetime, which you can check out on the DraftKings Network as well, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern, and also the host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And we didn't get to these, but because we're feeling good on this Saturday morning, I'll let you know what Tim also liked. He did like Iowa State getting 4.5 in the Cy-Hawk battle, going with the home dog there in Ames. Temple +9, and also California +6.5 against Auburn, an SEC team coming out west.
Disrespectful taking Temple on a show from New Jersey against the great Rutgers program. Disrespectful. You can't do that. I'm glad we didn't get to that game. That's disrespectful.
go ahead with Rutgers. Scarlet
Knights. You can't mess with Rutgers. You can't. Yeah. No. I mean, I didn't go to school there, but it is my state school.
Yeah,
you know?
It is.
I mean, James Gandolfino went there. So, I mean, Tony Soprano's school. Yeah. So, you know, we're not going to let him disrespect that.
Oh, it goes down in Piscataway later on tonight. The line's now
nothing
down
nothing like Piscataway. Don't make fun of Piscataway. It's a nice little town.
I'm not making fun of it. I liked my time in Jersey. I've only been one time. But Weehawken, shout out to the folks out there. I liked it. You know, right across. You see New York from the Hudson River. It was a nice time in Weehawken. Yeah. We enjoyed our stay out there. But let's get to the NFL news and notes. We'll talk some more college football with our buddy Matt Youmans later on in hour number two. That's 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific. But we saw some big money extensions, Michael, in the NFL right before kickoff Thursday night. The biggest one being Joe Burrow, who now has signed the richest contract in NFL history, and he's definitely worth it. 5 years, $275 million extension. That's an annual basis of $55 million per year, upwards of $219 million guaranteed. And this is one that you've talked about all offseason, being this is an easy contract to do. They just kind of have to do it, and they did it right before the season kicked off Thursday night.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was hard. And, you know, we got to see what the contract is, right? I mean, always the numbers that come out, we're never sure. But it obviously is going to be a great contract, and he earned it. And how they spread the money and how everything is involved will let us know where they plan to go with Ja'Marr Chase and Higgins, who they want to re-sign to. I mean, Mike Brown made it clear he was going to pay the players. And when Mike Brown says it, and I think it was somewhat symbolic, and I enjoyed that he did it. I mean, he did it on his dad's birthday. You know, his dad is the greatest coach of all time, in my opinion. He's developed the infrastructure to coaching, Paul Brown. And for me, it was kind of a way for him to pay his franchise, kind of pay back the franchise that his father started to pay this rich contract. And we don't do enough of that in the NFL. We don't really honor those before us, which we should. And I think this was kind of – everybody thought it was symbolic of the time of when they did it with the Chief game because of the rivalry between the two. I agree there was some of that, but I also think because of – on his birthday, I think it really was about his dad as well.
I didn't even think about that, the angle with the Chiefs game going on and all that stuff. Maybe that's something there to it. But, I mean, yeah, it's I think that's really cool that they did it on his dad's birthday there. I mean, Joe Burrow now the face of the franchise for the Cincinnati Bengals, one of the best quarterbacks in the league, a blue-chip quarterback, which we will discuss the red-chip and blue-chip quarterbacks coming up in the next segment. But, yeah, this was a no-brainer. It's like, you just get this done. This is a guy that he's going to be your guy for the next 10 to 12, maybe in 15 years, and you're going to go ahead and be contending for Super Bowls with Joe Burrow behind center. But it is interesting, like, they obviously wanted to pay Burrow, but when you talk about the wide receivers that are coming up here, like with T. Higgins, will they pay him? That's questionable. Ja'Marr Chase this time next year will be eligible for an extension. So a lot of big money contracts that are left to be handed out there by the Cincinnati Bengals, but kudos to them. They drafted really well. And when you draft well, you got to make these decisions. We also saw Nick Bosa. This was done about 4 hours after we recorded our podcast on Wednesday. That was cool. But the 49ers and Nick Bosa came to an agreement. 5 years, $170 million. The richest defensive contract in NFL history, $34 million per year annually, $122.5 million guaranteed. So Bosa signed, sealed, delivered, ready to go tomorrow afternoon against Pittsburgh.
We said on the pod that, you know, if he could get it done by 5 o'clock California time, then I thought he would play. And the words that have come out have indicated that they didn't think they were close and that Bosa, you know, kind of forced the action and got in there. Look, as I said all along, I expected him to play. I expected him to be there on time. He's not going to miss a check. And he'll be in shape. Can he play 70 plays? Probably not. Can he play 50? Probably. So, and they need to be careful here too, Femi, because you don't want to put a player who hasn't gone through training camp on the field and risk pull a calf muscle, you know, pull a hamstring, do something like that. So I think you need to be careful, but he also can impact the game. And it wasn't hard to do because this contract was based on being defensive player of the year and a dominating player. You never can overpay great. I've maintained this all along. Bosa is a great player. You can't overpay greatness. Now, here's the problem you get into, and this is what made Brett Veach probably a little bit unhappy, is how does this contract relate to Chris Jones? And your first response would be, well, Chris Jones is a tackle. He's not a defensive end. Well, this is where it gets a little iffy, because when they went ahead of Aaron Donald's contract, who is a tackle, they're saying there is a market for a tackle to be the highest paid defensive lineman because Donald got that. And now an end went back over it. So what is the tackle market? Is it $24 million what Quentin Williams received? or is it going to be $31 million or higher? Because remember, that Donald contract is old. It's not a new contract.
Yeah, you took the question right out of my mouth, because that was going to be my follow-up. Is like, how does Chris Jones now see this news, and what does that do for the negotiations between he and the Kansas City Chiefs? Now, there were some rumblings that maybe the Chiefs and Jones were getting closer. I mean, Chris Jones was at the game Thursday night, sitting up in the stands in his suite watching the game. So I don't know if that was an indication or if we should read anything into that. But now if you're Chris Jones and you're his agent and you see Bosa get 34 – you want to be at least above 31 with where Donald had. Like, I think you're probably like, hey, like, why can't we get 32, 33, or maybe even eclipse Bosa? Because Chris Jones, 15 and a half sacks last year, best defensive tackle in the league last season. Like, he is one of those great players that, in theory, you should not be able to overpay. Like, that's what you want to be paying for, because he's that much of a game changer.
Well, okay, then I'm going to ask you, Mr. GM. Davante Adams is at 28 a year. Tyreek Hill's at 30. You know, and Cooper Kupp, who's going to go on IR, is at 26.7. And Travis Kelce's at 14. What are you going to do with him? Mm. Now, don't tell me Travis Kelce's a tight end, because he's not. He's a receiver. Not. And he's as good a receiver as Cooper Kupp. He's as good a receiver as A.J. Brown, who's at 25. So you're going to have to do something with him. He's at 14. I mean, he's at 14 a year. Odell Beckham made more money by not playing than Travis Kelce. So I think the Kelce conversation is really important in light of that game. Why? Because what we saw with the Chiefs offense was not really very good without Kelce on the field. Look, we can talk about Tony's drops. We can talk about Sky Moore's disappearance. They had 8 targets for 1 catch for 1 yard. You know, don't count on Tony to turn the corner, because he's either going to get hurt. I mean, one of the reasons he's a first-round pick that got traded so quickly is because there are concerns about everything that goes into the player, not the athlete. So that being aside, they need Kelce. Now, Kelsey's such a great kid, he's not looking for a raise. But he's getting lapped. I mean, he's getting double lapped here.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to do something with if you're Brett Veach, you realize he's 34 years old, but you realize he's been lapped. And Cooper Kupp's 30. And having problems. So that gets in the conversation. But let's advance it. All the talk about, you know, Chris Jones, they held the Detroit Lions to 14 points, their defense, without Chris Jones.
Yeah.
And they played as well as you could play. If you would have told Andy Reid before the game, you're only going to give up 14 points, he says, sign me up, we win. And I don't think Andy Reid anticipated his receivers were going to look as bad as they looked in terms of separation, not in terms of catching. Separating from the defender, getting open. That looked worse on the tape when I watched it yesterday than it did on TV. There was no place for Mahomes to throw the football, and Detroit's secondary is not elite by any means. So that's an issue for Kansas City. We talked about it on the pod, that their summer looked sluggish. Remember, they struggled to move the ball against Arizona in the second preseason game. Kelce wasn't on the field. Mahomes averaged 7.1 per pass attempt. So this is going to be a problem, and it comes back to, what do we do with Chris? But we need Kelce.
Yeah, they struggled against New Orleans as well in the preseason when those first couple drives when the starting offense was out there. But I guess my question to you would be this. When you watch the tape, did you see Kansas City get much pressure without blitzing? Like, did that front four create any pressure on Jared Goff?
I mean, not much. I mean, but look, Goff runs a play-action scheme. There's very little drop-back passes in the game. So, you know, when he gets pressure, it's really the third play of the game on third down, the back was supposed to pick up the rusher on his own dog, and he got crushed back in, and Goff couldn't make the throw. Goff's got so many play-action passes in there, it's hard to get pressure on him because of their run game.
It's an interesting conversation, and the Chiefs are an interesting spot, already behind the eight ball at 0-1. We'll talk some blue chip and red chip quarterbacks on the other side. This is the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Can you believe we've had 7 months without an NFL game? Well, that ended on Thursday, and the NFL is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the National Football League, and it's giving you a can't-miss offer for week one. This week, new customers can get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5 on any NFL game. Download now and use code VEGAS to sign up. New customers can take home $200 in bonus bets instantly just for betting $5. That's code VEGAS, only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. The crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe here in downtown Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi in the great state of New Jersey. This time tomorrow, we will be talking NFL games, where the market's moving. It's, the board's going to be lightened up, and I can't wait to see it. It's like Christmas morning. This is Christmas Eve for me, at least, with the full slate of Sunday coming up tomorrow. But before we get into all of that stuff, Michael, let's discuss our blue chip and red chip quarterbacks. This is a series that we did all throughout the offseason on our podcast, the GM Shuffle podcast. We encourage everyone to go ahead and get that wherever they get their podcasts. But we've gone through each position group, the quarterbacks, of course, being the one that is most valuable. And when you discuss kind of the blue chips and the red chips, what is the differentiation between a blue chip and a red chip QB? Because obviously red chip quarterbacks are really good quarterbacks, but the blue chips are the elite of the elite. Like, what kind of differentiates the two in your eyes?
Well, you know, I get most of my quarterback advice from my grandson, Dominic, who kind of has, you know, his favorite quarterback.
He's got the eye.
I have to, I got to pay attention to him because he certainly knows way more. He's got his own whiteboard in his house.
There we go.
I got to pay attention to him. I think the difference between these guys, you can't take, and it goes for all positions, you can't take a blue chip player out of the game. There's nothing you can do to say, okay, he's not going to be as effective. You know, for example, if you rush Kyler Murray straight down the middle and keep him in the pocket, you take him out of the game. If you take Jared Goff, who I have as a red chip, and force him into a full dropback pass game, he's not going to be as effective. If Kirk Cousins doesn't get great protection, he won't be. Whereas Jalen Hurts in this six-back offense, you can't take him out. Now, the problem is he doesn't get behind in the games, but you really can't because they don't change what they do offensively. So that's the difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have an answer to everything that you put in front of them. I didn't put Lamar Jackson into the blue chip category because he was hurt last year, but it's hard to take Lamar out of the game. One of the ways you take Lamar out of the game is make him play from behind, which is the same thing a lot of quarterbacks struggle to do is when they have to play from behind, can they do it? We saw Burrow do it. We've seen Mahomes do it. Hurts doesn't have to do it as much because his team's always in the league. We see Herbert do it, and at times we see Josh Allen do it.
Yeah, and you wrote about these blue chip and red chip quarterbacks in your look ahead article, which we encourage everyone to go ahead and check out at vsin.com. This will be a weekly article from Michael updating his power ratings and also his blue chip red chip quarterbacks and everything that's around the NFL.
Every Friday.
Yeah,
and I should probably have a section of, you know, I need to put it in there. I need to put Twitter Femi it quotes in my Friday column, and I probably should get some of my grandson Dominic's picks in there too.
Hey, you were agreeing with Twitter Femi as it pertains to the Lions scheme Thursday night. All right, I read the column. I was like, okay, he's seeing what I was seeing on Thursday night. It's like it wasn't what we expected.
First of all, you know, I expected this Gibbs to play. He played 16 plays.
Yeah, that was crazy.
I think this happens a little bit, and as fans and as bettors, we have to be aware of this. You know, everybody's job in the National Football League, everybody thinks it's paid to win. There's really only one coach on the staff who is essentially tied to winning. That's the head coach. Everybody else's job is within the description of their job. Offensive coordinator, get first down, score points. Defensive coordinator, create turnovers, don't let them score, right? And sometimes I think coordinators get a little bit too ahead of themselves, particularly offensively, where they lose sight of what is going on with the game. And that game on Thursday night, they could have run the ball really effectively against a Chief team that was struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they got away from it a little too quick. I think they got away from it a little too early. I think they could have had more rushing attempts. I mean, look, they had 56, and what happened with them on third down was a problem. They couldn't convert third downs to keep the continuity going, which I think is one of the reasons why their offense didn't look as crisp. You know, they get three first down conversions in the fourth quarter. They were having a horrible third down day. They ended up 5 for 15 in the game, but they got three of them in the fourth quarter. We have to pay more attention to the fourth quarter. 20 plays for Detroit in the fourth quarter, 6 first downs, convert 3 third downs in the fourth. That's where they won the game.
Yeah, and I think that those converting those first down, third downs in the fourth quarter, that helped keep Kansas City off the field. Only 12 plays for the Chiefs in the fourth quarter, which it's like, if you're not going to have plays, it's hard to go ahead and come back if you are behind. But let's get back to our blue chips and red chips list. I want to start with the red chips, actually, before we get to the blue chips or the creme de la creme. The red chip quarterbacks, you have Geno Smith of the Seattle Seahawks, Kirk Cousins of the Minnesota Vikings, Trevor Lawrence with the Jacksonville Jaguars, Jared Goff, who we saw Thursday night, an efficient performance from Goff with the Detroit Lions, and then Lamar Jackson with the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, look, Lamar's got blue chip qualities to him, but last year he was hurt. I think he'll resume to be a blue chip. Goff, to me, is perfect for the system. You've got to be able to run the ball. It's play action. If you speed him up, it's not as good. I think Lawrence can take a giant mother may I step forward. I think his improvement from rookie year to year two was great. Now he needs to go from year two to year three, right? The biggest jump every player makes is from rookie year to their third year, that evolution that creates itself. Cousins is still effective. They've got to protect him really well. Geno Smith, you know, he only throws 11 interceptions, which is interesting. 5 of them have come from the Rams defense. Can you believe that? Of the 11, almost 50% of his interceptions happen against a team that is not very good. So he needs to clean that up. But I think Geno's accuracy and his decision-making, I mean, Geno's very good at making decisions. And you go back to his time at West Virginia, he was really a good thrower of the ball. He was a pocket passer with athletic movement. You know, you just weren't sure how important football was to him back then. And I think through the mistakes and through the struggles and the Jets experience and then the Rams experience, you know, or the Chargers, you know, he's kind of grown up and now he's ready to be a really good player. And I don't think last year was an aberration. I think last year he played well and I think he'll continue to play well.
Yeah, he's talked about that maturation process there, like going from the guy who was frustrated having to go in the second round and then things didn't work out in New York to now where he's comeback player of the year and he's now the franchise quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks, at least as it pertains for the next couple of years. The blue chip quarterbacks, so this are the elite guys, and the best of the best, of course, is none other than Patrick Mahomes. Who could argue there? After Mahomes, you have Joe Burrow with the Bengals, who just signed the big deal. Jalen Hurts, he signed a big deal earlier this offseason, as did Justin Herbert. So this is the big money blue chip list here. Then you have Josh Allen, who signed a big deal last offseason with the Buffalo Bills. But these are the guys that are the cream of the crop as it pertains to the signal callers in the NFL.
Yeah, I think Mahomes saw how hard it is to play. You know, I don't have Hardman. I don't have Juju Smith-Schuster. I don't have Tyreek Hill. I don't have Kelsey. Like, who do I have, right? Sly Moore doesn't look like he's what they hoped he would be.
Yeah.
Tony's got talent, but it's just not there. It's inconsistent. And when he played volleyball with the interception, you know, that's a killer. It's one thing to drop it. It's the other thing to play volleyball is to set the number two man up and score a touchdown. You know, and so they're going to have to figure this out and they're going to have to grow up rather quickly. And I think Andy realizes it. You know, Andy doesn't want to run it. He, you know, as I said many times, and I think it was obvious in this game, he gets bored with it. He don't want to have to run it. And they're just struggling. They're going to struggle. They're lucky that Juwan Taylor didn't get called for being in the backfield. I thought he was on the punt team the way he lined up. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, Collinsworth called him a slot receiver near the end of the game.
Well, it took him three quarters to call it to him. I mean, we're going crazy on Twitter about it. I mean, it was the first thing I saw. It's like that's an illegal formation.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how they didn't see it.
Yeah, it's beyond me, but maybe they just saw something different or they were looking for something different. They weren't looking for a legal formation. We have a minute left in this segment here as we wrap up hour number two, but I want to ask you this. You have those redshirt quarterbacks, and the two I want to focus on, Trevor Lawrence and Lamar Jackson. Of those two guys, which one do you think is most likely to crack the blue chips list when we do this exercise next year?
Well, Lamar's already been there. He's already been a blue chip player, won the MVP of the league. It's going to be interesting to see how he reacts to Munkin's offense and how that all goes and all these skilled players that they've got. Remember, Lamar throws the ball in the middle of the field. That's when he's at his best. And if they do that, he'll be effective. Lawrence, now look, this offense can be really good if they protect him. Mm-hmm. With Ridley in there to go along with Kirk and Zay Moore, I mean, they can be really good. Zay Jones, I'm sorry. They could be really good. So
Zay Flowers.
ATN. Yeah. ATN's the key. The key.
Yeah. No, I think the Jags offense, from what everyone's been saying at training camp about Calvin Ridley, they could really go to the next level here if they're able to protect. But that is the big question mark, especially early in the season with Cam Robinson suspended as of right now. All right, that does it for hour number one. Hour number two, no way, no doubt, coming up next here on the DraftKings Network.